can I change the focus from history to sort of, you just kind of introduced it, would say, what is teaching? I mean, when you think about it, you obviously had a pretty emotional experience thinking about teaching. What's a good teacher? What's teaching about?
Well, as you know very well, there's so many different views on that, and at different levels. At the philosophical level, you can look at the great thinkers and what they thought teaching was, you know, Socrates and others. And,
I'm kind of interested.
John Dewey and so Jim. Forth, so there's that. Yeah. Well, yeah, so there's that philosophical level. And for me, it was student development. And so it was an adult development or a, you know, late adolescent adult development activity to help students grow, to get them excited about ideas, to, you know, move them forward somehow in their education, not training. And, you know, it's not... So that's very simply what it was. It's a human development process.
What does it take to be a good teacher? Do you, you know, if I were sitting here and I were a 15-year-old high school student saying, boy, I'd like to be a good teacher someday, what does a good teacher do? What does he or she look like? How does that happen?
Well, certainly you have to know your material. I mean, you have to know your area, know also what you don't know, and, you know, have the background in, for example, if you're teaching introductory psychology, to be on top of what's going on in the field. So that, I was going to say, that goes without saying, but there's a lot of dummies who don't know their area, and, you know, they try to pretend they do. So you have to know your area. But then in terms of the human part of it, it's caring about individual students, even in big classes, which sometimes is a lot more challenging. Something as simple as, just to give you an example, as learning students' names. It just amazed me. I've had faculty say, you know, I don't know my students' names. Do you have a big class? Oh, it's 30 people. They just didn't take the time. I mean, 30 people, for Christ's sake. That's just ridiculous. And if you've got a good-sized class, 50 or even 100, and you make an attempt to learn everybody's names, which I usually was able to do until my memory went downhill and I'd get about 90% of them right. But if students see something as simple as that, that you care about my name, it's like cheers. Somebody knows your name. The teacher knows my name. And that's just an example. I mean, if that's just a trick you're doing to pretend that you care, then you know, that doesn't work. But then to, for example, the first day of class, I would always do a little survey, and not a survey, but a questionnaire, personal background thing. Just hometown, hobbies, favorite TV shows, stuff like that. And then I do some, in class, you know, there'd be somebody there, and say, oh, yeah, you're one of the, there'd be this group of guys from Parks College, the pilots, you know, they were going to go, and they'd maybe screw off sitting in the back. So, well, you'd start talking to them about stuff they were interested in and involve them, and I thought that was, you know, good. And then they also tend to pay more attention, and so it's, in order to help students develop, you have to care about the students, and that's just one simple way to do it, to know their name and a little bit about them, certainly how they're doing in your class, maybe even, you know, you try to get them to come into your office. That's, you know, sometimes often hard to do, unless some teachers require it. So I'd say that's, you know, knowing your material and then caring about the individual students. And there's a lot more to it. I mean, there's all the things about being able to prepare good assessments of your students, being able to find activities. I think a teacher, another important point would be to use as much active learning as possible. Talk less and do more. I have the students doing the active learning, not you. I mean, a demonstration is not active learning.
Mm-hmm.
I have a friend who says when a psychologist brings a rat in a Skinner box to class and shows the rat pressing the bar, the only active learning is being done by the rat. So that's a demonstration, and students mm-hmm. say, oh yeah, this stuff works, and you know, you can, that's reinforcement, mm-hmm. here's extinction and all of that. Fine, they're not doing it. The mm-hmm. demonstration is doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So act, care about the students, have them actively involved, because learning happens in the student, not in them, not while you're talking. And knowing your material, I'd say those three things. Mm-hmm.
Can you give me an example? This could be a tough question, but can you give me, does anything jump into your mind about a classroom learning experience that you used in your classes, in one or more, that you're really proud of, that you know, wow, this really worked. This was something that my students really engaged and were able to learn from.
Well, I did a lot of small group things, and it's hard, I think, dividing students into groups. You know, again, a lot of teachers will say, well, I got a class of 100, so okay, fine. That's, you know, that's 50 groups of two. You can do that, and students can turn around and talk to each other. So the group stuff usually worked pretty well. Even if some of the groups were just screwing off, more people were learning than would if I was standing there talking.
Mm-hmm.
So often it depended on what the content was as to whether students were really involved. When I taught intro psych and taught the section on psychopathology and psychotherapy, which I know nothing about as a practitioner because mm-hmm. I'm not a clinical psychologist, I would have I would present students with a case, and I would be the case. I'd act out this person who has weather anxiety, and as you know from our emails, I have weather anxiety. It's going to snow. Look, and I put on the Weather Channel up on the screen. That's where technology helped, and I'd find some place where this pink area was creeping across and demonstrate the anxiety, and I'd be the, and I'd give out all these symptoms. Then their job was to make a diagnosis. So they had their books, this open book, to say, okay, what's, so each group of five or six students, mm-hmm. you know, what's this guy got? That was the first thing, make a diagnosis. Mm-hmm. And then in the chapter on therapy, okay, what's your therapy gonna be to help this person get over it? And they really got into that. And, mm-hmm. and they could, you know, you had to go through the book and look, find out, you know, anxiety disorders and so forth, parents of paranoia. They'd have to talk about that, and they have to look at their book. They have to open it. It might be the first time they'd open the book. Same with the therapy. They had to talk about that and which one would be effective and so forth. So they were, you know, they were pretty involved. So I thought that was a good one.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the stuff that worked real well were demonstrations because I'd like to show off. You probably like to show off. And so a big part of teaching that's a challenge for people who are good performers is getting over yourself. So I could do that. I could have a class of 100 or 200 and show off and talk and tell jokes and make demonstrations and all that, but you know, that's putting on a show. I don't know what's going on in their heads. Mm-hmm. They're not involved as they are in a small group
mm-hmm.
activity. So some of the things I can think of were demonstrations where I could show off and they'd laugh and they'd, you know, I would hope they'd learn something.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes on the test, I'd say, okay, in class Korn presented this tape of rock music sung backwards. What was that an example of? A lot of them wouldn't get it. So they remembered we did it, and it was funny. And I get this tape of Queen, you know, Another One Bites the Dust, playing, going backwards.
Uh-huh.
And that's funny. Of course, to them, it's an old classic, you know, eons ago.
Sure.
Beethoven was writing music then. So I'm sort of babbling away.
That's okay.
That's the thing that I think a lot of, there's some people that win teaching awards, and they're performers. And there are people that don't win teaching awards. I'm not talking about myself at all, but you know, I know there are people that are working Tom Kramer used to have this office.
Sure.
That's where I learned about small groups. Tom was a great group person. Taught a course on groups, which we don't teach anymore because he left, although it's a, you know, it's just such an important course, and a group course on teams for undergraduates, teamwork. He didn't win a teaching award because he won, I shouldn't say because, he didn't win one. He should have. Some of the people who win the awards are just, they're wonderful performers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So it's sometimes is a performance award.
Yeah, I agree. I think in some ways the valuations reward good performance and not necessarily good teaching, but that's different. And just FYI, I teach small group now over in the communication department. Yeah, I'm teaching it right now.
That's such an important course.
Yeah. Is there a student or a time, one particular instance that you really feel like this was a moment, this was a learning moment, this student, a person, you don't have to name a name if you don't want, but a time when you really felt it all came together and you're really proud of that moment.
Around an individual?
Yeah, or just that sort of you, if you thought about it, that kind of defined your nature as a teacher, you're really proud of that moment. It could be with an individual, it could be with a class accomplishment. Anything jump out?
Not really, because the cases I can think of that I've felt the most effective were processes that took place over a period of time, not a particular instance in a class. Just mm-hmm. somebody who got into a class and was just one of the massive students and then got interested, would come and talk about things. I mean, that happened not a lot, but mm-hmm. often enough, but it happens over a period of time. It's not somebody standing up and shouting Eureka in the middle of class.
Yeah. How does that make you feel when a student gets it over time? Somebody interested in teaching excellence?
Yeah, well, as student development, when you can actually see the development happening, and somebody actually comes and puts it in your face, you know, that's certainly very rewarding.
Mm-hmm. Do you miss teaching?
No, I don't. I didn't think I'd miss it, but I thought when I retired that would be one activity that I might enjoy. I live not far from Maryville University, and I thought, and Missouri Baptist too. I thought, well, one of those places, maybe I'd just go and see if I could help out. I don't want to take a job away from some graduate student that's looking for part-time work, but you know, if there was something I could do that wasn't being done and they needed help with, that I might want to do it, but I don't. And it's not that I'm so busy with so many other things and traveling and whatnot. So I'm not sure what it is. I think part of it is that the generation gap really got bigger than I thought it was going to get. So I'm almost 70 years old, and these students could be my grandchildren. My oldest grandchild is 13, and you know, if everybody had started having their kids younger, that would be grandchild mm-hmm. age. So it's I don't know. It was just getting different, and I'm not sure what it is, Bob. Whether you know what, but no, I don't have any mm-hmm. any interest in it. I took all these files home. I still have files that I'm dragging home, and I think, well, what are these there for? I had a in the basement. I had to get a you know go to Lowe's and get a new rack to yeah. put storage boxes on. For these courses, and I think, well, I'm not going to teach this course. So for intro psych, I've got four boxes of you know files and activities and all this stuff. You know, what the heck am I going to do with this?
Does being a good teacher take its toll on a person, do you think?
I don't think so. Well, no, I don't think so. No, I think it's if you're, I mean, it, you know, it has its ups and downs, as you know, any teacher knows there's good days and bad days. But overall, it's most of the time until probably the year I retired, it was rejuvenating, and not rejuvenating, it was what you were supposed to, what you wanted to do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it was not a job, it was your life, and your, and that's exaggerating to your family, and people in family and community and so forth, but it's your vocation, it's your calling.
Mm-hmm.
So you're fulfilling yourself, so that's not...
Mm-hmm.
You know, there are challenges. Sometimes it's hard. You know, some things, days are difficult, but that's part of the challenge. If it's a bad day, whatever bad day means, try to figure out, well, what, what about the situation made this a bad day? I'm not a bad teacher, so there was something didn't go on that day.
Mm-hmm.
And often when that happens, you go to the students and say, oh, remember last class? I didn't think that was very good. You know, what happened?
Yeah,
what here's what I think happened.
Mm-hmm.
One time that didn't work at all. The students got into a sort of a big argument. It got a little confrontatious, and I knew I had handled it poorly. And that was in my later years of teaching. I should have known better on how to handle getting feedback live from a class, and didn't manage it well. But that's beside the point. The point is that in general, I don't think it takes it.
Mm-hmm. So where can I find your teaching philosophy if you're not going to share it with me?
I mean, I can't. I tell the students in my teaching class, they all have to do a teaching philosophy and work on it. I tell them, you got to have a sound bite, because when you go for a job interview, some dean is going to ask you that question.
Uh-huh.
Tell me your... I see you've got a teaching philosophy, and I don't want to read it right now. Just sort of tell me what it is. You need to be prepared to give them a 1 minute or maybe a 30-second sound bite. And so I think it's probably what I said before, you know, get to know your students. The emphasis on active learning and knowing your area would be the three parts of it, and realizing that if there are bad days, to try and figure out what happened, because mostly it's a good life, and I don't know if it's the last sentence there, but I always finish any talks I give by saying it's a wonderful thing to be a teacher.
Thank you. I appreciate the conversation.
You're welcome.
Good.